The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu. Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. You can go beyond giving to impact. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
From WABE in Atlanta, this is Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Coming up on today's program, Dr. Helene Gale has long worked in global health policy and administration. Now, she's Spelman College's 11th president, so she'll join me in just a few moments as we talk about key priorities for the historically black women's college. Plus,
keeper Bennett gets a block. Georgia draws first blood.
And they would draw some more blood. They left no doubt after that. The Georgia Bulldogs capture a consecutive National College Football Championship. We'll talk about all that later in the show as well. Those conversations coming up. But first this. Now, state lawmakers are taking the day off because of what happened last night. And normally this would have been just the second day of the legislative session. But don't worry. WAB politics reporter Raul Bali looks ahead to the rest of the week.
Early tomorrow morning is the Georgia Chamber's Eggs and Issues Breakfast, which state leaders have used in the past to roll out new initiatives and proposals. State lawmakers then return to session late tomorrow morning. Then Thursday is the inauguration of Governor Brian Kemp and other state constitutional officers. Meantime, lawmakers have approved a calendar for all 40 days of the session, something that's not happened at the beginning of the session in recent memory. It could be a sign of better relations between the House and Senate, along with more respect for the personal and professional lives of lawmakers. Raul Bali, WABE News, the state capitol.
In other news, Atlanta Public Schools is adding another layer of protection to safety and security in order to enter the buildings. Now, it's a new weapon detection system already in place at all middle and high schools. They're the same units used at large-scale arenas like Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's called the Evolve system, and it allows schools to screen large group of students so there's not a traffic jam in front of the buildings in the morning. APS and other metro districts have made enhancing school security more of a priority in 2023, and they're also pressing state leaders to put forth more funding to help keep weapons out of classrooms. And a note of disclosure, WAB's broadcast license is held by the Atlanta Board of Education. Now, as mentioned earlier, when state lawmakers really get into the swing of activity this legislative session, they'll face a host of big health and healthcare-related issues. Jess Mador has more on what they might tackle this time around.
Last year's bipartisan Mental Health Parity Act outlined a roadmap for improving Georgia's mental health care system over the next few years. One key provision already in effect prohibits insurance companies from denying coverage for mental health care. Jeff Breedlove with the Georgia Council for Recovery.
So when a family's in crisis with mental health or addiction, families are finally going to be able to get the coverage they're entitled to under the law in Georgia.
Now, Breedlove says more needs to be done across the state. His group is banking on incoming Republican House Speaker John Burns to help build consensus around boosting mental health services.
The numbers are going up on overdose deaths, and the funding for existing programs needs to keep pace with the medical reality.
That medical reality is an epidemic of overdoses, mostly linked to opioids. Breedlove's group wants more money for peer-led treatment and recovery programs and to grow the state's workforce of mental health providers. Fully expanding Medicaid would help with that funding for mental health. It would also strengthen the state's struggling hospital system, but advocates have so far not been successful in convincing Governor Brian Kemp or powerful Republicans to do it. And Georgians for a Healthy Future director Laura Colbert says it's a long shot this session.
The governor does not have any meaningful motivation to move forward with Medicaid expansion because he won so decisively in November and because he got the green light on his pathways waiver.
Pathways is Governor Brian Kemp's limited expansion plan, initially greenlit by the Trump administration. It would cover around 50,000 adults as long as they work or volunteer for 80 hours a month. Critics say full Medicaid expansion would cover roughly 500,000 currently uninsured Georgians and save the state more money per person covered. For now, Kemp's limited expansion work requirement plan could take effect this summer. Jess Mador, WABE News.
And finally, that is still Dre from producer and artist Dr. Dre. It also features the D-O-double-G Snoop Dogg. Now, the song was on Dr. Dre's album called 2001. Here we go. Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene used the song in a promotional video that was uploaded to social media. Okay, here we go. Dr. Dre was not happy and therefore, through attorneys, sent Representative Greene a cease and desist letter informing Greene to stop using Dre's music to promote her, quote, divisive and hateful political agenda, close quote, and that using a song without permission is copyright infringement. The letter states that Dr. Dre, whose name is Andre Young, will never grant Greene permission to broadcast his music. However, we can. This is a closer look. Still got love for the streets, repping 213. Still the beats bang, still doing my thing. Since I left, ain't too much change. Still, I'm representing for them gangsters all across the world. Still, hitting them corners in them lolos, girl. Still, taking my time to perfect the beat. And I still got love for the streets, it's the D.R.E. I'm representing for them gangsters all across the world. Still, hitting them corners in them lolos, girl. Still, taking my time to perfect the beat. And I still got love for the streets, it's the D.R.E. Since the last time you heard for me, I lost some friends. Well, hell, me and Snoop, we dipping again. I kept my ear to the streets. And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. I gotta tell you, I have a lot of awards, but I have never had this award. Now, back in 2015, Dr. Helene Gayle was honored with a social humanitarian award from the global women's empowerment and movement brand Black Girls Rock.
My mother, herself a Black girl who rocked, told me, "You have a good brain and a big mouth, so use them." And so I have tried to do just that, use my talents and my voice to work towards greater social justice here and around the globe. And I believe that one of the surest ways to do that is by lifting the voices of girls and women, because when girls and women gain voice, they become empowered. And when that happens, everyone wins, families, communities, nations, and ultimately our world. Thank you.
Dr. Gayle's global work has been at the intersection of health and humanitarian issues, as well as global and domestic economic development. And she served as the president and CEO of the international humanitarian organization CARE, headquartered here in Atlanta. Now, you may not know this, but Dr. Gayle began her career at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, where she spent nearly 20 years focusing on HIV/AIDS prevention and global health. Well, now, Dr. Gayle has a new chapter of her professional journey, president of Spelman College here in Atlanta. And of course, you know what that means. Madam President, welcome. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. It's an honor to be with you.
Where do you have your Black Girls Rock Award? Where is it?
It's sitting on a desk. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, it was quite an inspiration, quite an honor.
You know, the last time we spoke, you were beginning another new chapter. You were headed to the McKinsey Social Initiative.
Right.
Along the way, for all the organizations that you've been involved in, and you have done a lot, do you gain new leadership skill sets along the way, things that you pick up from every stop that still continue to help you in that next chapter?
Yeah, definitely. You know, every job I take, I realize I would not have been as prepared as I am had I not done the job right before. So, you know, I think I take something from each of the jobs and I continue to grow with each of them.
You mentioned your mother in that speech, and we've never really talked about your mom. Tell me about her.
Well, my mother was an incredible woman. She was a social worker. She graduated from Fisk and went on to get a master's degree at Columbia University. So she's one of the first black women to get a master's degree at an Ivy League school like Columbia. Went on to marry, have five children, and I think really instilled in all of us a real sense of commitment to giving mm-hmm. back to society.
Is that where you get a lot of what you've done, your passion that you've done all your life? Does it come from your mother, you think?
Well, clearly my mother was one of the big influences. Yeah. I think the society and the times that I grew up were another influence. But my parents, both of them, my father and my mother, really did believe that we were put on this earth to make it a little bit better than when we got on. So giving back was a huge part of what they instilled in all of us.
When you're walking around the campus of Spelman and you're watching and you're interacting with the students, does your mind go back to your first year in college, and what do you think about?
Oh, it does. And I just keep saying, did I ever look that young? But it's kind of fun. You know, my first few months, I kept saying, I feel like I'm on the set of a different world. You know, because it really is quite an honor and privilege to be surrounded with these young black women, all of whom have this passion and desire to really make a difference. And, you know, we say going to Spelman is making a choice to change the world.
I know
so, Yeah. You know, so it's great.
What questions have they asked you?
The students?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think the question number one, not only students, but everybody, why did you choose to come to Spelman? Why now? You've done so many other things. So I think that's one of the things they're most curious about. And, you know, for me, I feel like it's part of a journey that I've been on. And, you know, this is my opportunity to give back to the next generation and, you know, take the things that I have learned along the way and hopefully put it to the service of helping the next generation of change makers.
Was there any long period of time you took to say, you know what, maybe I do want to consider this, maybe I want it, I don't know, maybe I want to stay in global health and that whole arena?
Yeah, you know, back to your question about each job preparing you for the next, you know, I don't think I would have been prepared or even understood why coming to Spelman made sense for me two or three jobs ago. You know, I really did feel that this came at the right time for me, at a time where giving back to the next generation is really a real passion for me. I think it also came at a time when I had been focused on domestic issues mm-hmm. more than global, but really feeling that my global and the local really are important as we think about how we prepare the next generation of young people who are growing up in a global world but still want to be able to be relevant to their own communities.
And so many students have an opportunity through programs at Spelman to go abroad. And if there's anyone that has global connections, it's Dr. Helene Gale. Will you use some of that influence and the pathways that you have to help some of these students go abroad and see what's happening outside of Atlanta, Georgia?
Yes, definitely. I just think it is such an important aspect of one's education, whether they get it in college or later, to be able to have that experience of seeing themselves differently because they're in a different culture. Understanding issues from other people's perspective. And I wish more people did travel out of the country, because I think if they did, they would come back and not be so stuck in some of the very unproductive ways in which I think, you know, we are getting stuck in. So I really hope that every student who wants a global experience at Spelman will have the opportunity to do that.
Did you speak to get advice from other college presidents, and particularly those who are leading women's colleges or HBCUs? Did you seek those folks out? And what did
most
they tell
definitely,
you?
Yeah. Most definitely. You know, and one of the things, having been in and out of Atlanta since 1984, I've had the opportunity to know the five past Spelman presidents. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the institution changes all the time, but still it's been very helpful to get their own perspective on Spelman. I've had the opportunity to talk to other leaders of women's colleges. I'm a product of mm-hmm. a women's liberal arts college, Barnard, so I had a chance to talk to the current Barnard president, Wellesley president, Smith, others mm-hmm. Who have gone and been on a similar journey, and it's been incredibly useful. But not just the women's liberal arts colleges. I'm really a big believer that we don't do these things by ourselves, and it really is by talking to others who have walked maybe a little bit further than you have on that journey that can be very helpful as I'm thinking about how I want to be the president of Spelman.
And also, Madam President, coming at a time where we're not where we were two or three years ago in terms of the pandemic, and every institution of higher learning and every academic setting, whether it was pre-K or what have you, had to shift and change. And in talking to not only your predecessor, but also other presidents saying, you know, this was extraordinary. We had to shift and focus and make sure we were there for our faculty, our staff, our students. Now, 3 years, you know, into the pandemic, how do you feel like Spelman is in terms of dealing with anything that might be left over dealing with the pandemic? And COVID-19, of course, is still here. But how would you assess how you all have been able to now even continue in 2023?
Well, I think not just Spelman or even just universities, but I think as a world community, we're all learning how to take some of the lessons of COVID and take what we learned new and realize that we can't go back to pre-COVID. We're a changed society. We're learning how to do work differently. We're learning how to use technology differently. We're learning to be more flexible about how people learn. Mm-hmm. So I think all of those things will figure into how we think about the Spelman of the future and how we want to make sure that we've learned some of the lessons of COVID, bad ones, but also some of the ones that teach us how we can do things differently and keep moving.
Is that part of also one of your priorities? I know everyone has a strategic plan, either that they're coming into that they still have to execute or implement, or you may want to start over. What has been your philosophy in terms of moving Spelman forward? Do you have your own set of priorities? What are the top two, maybe?
Well, so I'm fortunate in that I'm coming into a strategic plan that we will extend for one more year and, you know, building on a lot of the great work that Mary Schmidt Campbell did, mm-hmm. Particularly, you know, I think most notably is the new Center for Innovation in the Arts, a building that will be there mm-hmm. that will be the first time there'll be a building that opens up to the community around Spelman and that really focuses on the arts, but with a idea of how innovation and technology are all part of that, so that it's not a STEM or arts, but really how do you bring mm-hmm. those two together? You know, there's been a lot of great work already being done, as you mentioned, around global. It's an area that I want to see us do more. I would like to see us do more around the West End neighborhood that we reside in. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that the West End is still a neighborhood with a lot of needs and a lot of need for economic development that will be good for the neighborhood, but will also be good for our students. So I think there's more that can be done in that area. We're launching a new Center for Black Entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. It's a joint center with Morehouse College. Black women are the fastest growing segment of the entrepreneurial ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So we want to be able to really build that out. And not that everybody needs to start their own business, but no matter what field you go into, this sense of entrepreneurship is such a critical area and a critical mindset. Innovation, you know, we're doing a lot more in innovation, particularly in the science areas mm-hmm. and how to think about young people creating their own entities, their own machines, their own They're doing all of this really neat.
Well, your spell bots are just, they're just phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
I love them.
I go in and see what they're doing, where they're creating, doing gaming and all sorts of things. So, you know, I think this entrepreneurship mindset, the innovation mindset, still while thinking about what does it mean to be a critical thinker for a liberal arts school, we want to make sure that we are developing young people who learn to learn and will be lifelong learners. And that, I think, is the most important part of what a liberal arts education actually does.
And in order for that to happen, and you and I both know that
money.
How'd you know? You've been looking at my script, Madam President. You knew where I was going.
That's the script for every college president. You know, and so for me, that's a big one, because we can't do any of these things. We can't continue to keep our excellent faculty, recruit the high-quality students that we do, keep our infrastructure strong. All of those things, we need resources. And as you well know, even the top HBCUs, when it comes to endowments, none of us have yet cracked the $1 billion.
Yeah.
And you look at somebody like a Princeton or a Harvard or a Yale, where they have endowments of $40 billion or more. We've got to do more if we want to be able to optimize this experience for our young people.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. If you're just joining us, I'm in conversation with Spelman College President Dr. Helene Gale. When we come back, we'll continue to talk about what those initiatives look like in terms of making sure students who enter as freshmen can graduate and finally do that little thing that y'all do, that little gesture that you do. It's a little Spelman gesture that y'all have. We're back in a moment.
Support for WABE comes from the Community Foundation for Greater Atlanta. If you love Atlanta, you can invest in the big picture. Learn more at cfgreateratlanta.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott, in conversation with Spelman College President Dr. Helene Gale. You know, we were talking about retention, not just for faculty and staff, but also making sure students, you know, that they can finish at Spelman. And you and I know the stories of kids, students who've had to, maybe they say, I'll just take a semester or two off, and then they never come back, or they have to go to a different institution simply because of finances.
Yeah, and that's one of the most heartbreaking things. You know, I get notes and letters from both students as well as their parents who are there, they want to be there. It was always their first choice. And then after a period, the finances just don't work out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're grateful that, you know, through government programs like the Pell Grants, as well as really generous donors who have contributed resources for scholarships, you know, that we're able to really punch well above our weight, if you will, just based on what we have in terms of our own endowment. But we need to do more. And we want to make sure not only do young women have the finances, but are we giving them the right sort of support to navigate the system successfully so that, you know, the education that they get is one that will be useful for them as they continue on their career journey, their career path. So, you know, career success and academic success is a big issue for us, and really continuing to find ways through new programs. One that I think is wonderful is called Braven, and it's one that's just come here to Atlanta that really helps students develop leadership skills, develop academic support, making sure that, you know, they, if they enter in, they get everything that they need to be successful as students and to navigate into their careers, or for some going on to further their education.
And you know, it's no secret, we know the plight of HBCUs can be quite a different path from, you know, predominantly white institutions. And when you look at that, statistics are showing us that, you know, we've seen a decrease in enrollment at PWIs, but seeing an increase in students applying for HBCUs and graduating from HBCUs. What does it say to you in terms of not just the, I don't want to use the word popularity, but we're seeing maybe a little bit of a shift for students to look at HBCUs?
Definitely. And we've seen a quadrupling of our applications over the last decade or so. And I think, you know, when we talk to young people, they say that, and this is often young people who've been accepted at some of the top schools, that they really want to be in a place where all they have to do is learn, where they are not having to think all the time about professors' low expectations of them, or someone not understanding who they are culturally, getting questions that sometimes may make them question themselves. Mm-hmm. So they want to be in a place that understands who they are, believes in them, believes they can achieve anything they want to, and that you have professors who are there to support you and to nurture you. And I think that experience of, as they say, only having to worry about being a student and mm-hmm. not having to worry about all the microaggressions, all the other issues that one has to worry about to navigate in this world, that's what I think why young people are feeling that this is a place where they want to go, where it's safe, where it's nurturing, where it understands them, where it supports them, where it believes in them.
I've had conversations with college presidents and talking about with if the affirmative action and everything with the Supreme Court, and I believe it was a president. I don't want to get it wrong, so I better say it. But she said, "Look, we think that that will help maybe attract more students to HBCUs."
True. Yeah. I think it will. And so, you know, I think we need to make sure we're prepared, that we have the kind of quality that students are looking for so that they get the very best educational experience while they're also getting an experience that's cultural and nourishing and reinforces who they are in the world. Because then they go out and they have such a strong sense of themselves, and that's why we see so many leaders coming out of HBCUs today, mm-hmm. because they did get that grounding along with the academic excellence.
Speaking of leaders, I want to go back to you for a second in terms of leadership style. We've had conversations before. So a moment ago, you talked about how you lessons learned from previous journeys along, you know, stops along the way in your journey. How is your leadership style now as opposed to, let's say, some years ago when you were at CARE?
Well, you know what? I guess one thing you learn along the way is how not to take yourself too seriously, how not to take others too seriously either, and let a lot of things roll off your back. I think I have the both the experience and maybe it's the confidence as well to realize that I don't have to be perfect. I put my all into the work that I do, but there are a lot of things that I've learned to let roll off my back, and I think that makes for a much less stressful leadership journey. You know, I think I've also accumulated specific skills along the way. I probably am a better people manager than I was before. I've, you know, made the mistakes. I've learned from them.
Like what?
I don't know. How you bring people together, how do you really bring a team together? How do you get the best out of the people that you're working for? How do you develop a strategy? We talked about strategy earlier. You know, I didn't come in with, here's a strategy that I'm going to shove down anyone's throat. Mm-hmm. I really believe that you create a vision and create a strategy by working with people so that they actually feel a part of it. And so I think there's a lot of how you work with groups and people to get the best out of them that I've learned increasingly along the way, and how to do that in a way that really brings out the best, so that people feel when you have created, again, I'll go back to strategy. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are things that I believe that I'm passionate about, but I also think there are things that I will learn by talking to others, by listening to others. So I think I'm a better listener than I might have been in the past.
So does the culture and environment start with you in terms of your staff, your executive staff, and the messaging? And you said bringing folks together. You've learned how to do, you have a better skill set. So.
Yeah, well, I hope that, I can help to lead the culture. But again, I believe that you create culture together. I want to set a tone. I set a tone of collaboration. I set, a tone where I think that, we all want to feel comfortable bringing our best selves, our best ideas, our experience to the table. And when you can bring all of that together, that's the tone you want to set. And that's how, so for me, the tone is not here's the way it's going to get done, mm-hmm. but how do we really bring people together with their experience, their passion, their commitment, so that we get a better product than any one person would by themselves? When I was first in some of my leadership roles, I think I had the idea that I had to have the answer, mm-hmm. that, if you're smart, you got the answer.
Yeah.
And you always want to be the smartest kid in the room. I now feel like, I want to make sure that I'm surrounded by the smartest people in the room, and I know how to get the best out of each of them.
It's from my favorite movie. I've said it 1,000 times, from Remember the Titans, attitude reflect leadership, How do you deal with criticism then?
Well, I think it's back in that category of learning not to take yourself too seriously and learning how to let things kind of roll off your back. On the other hand, criticism can be a form of feedback that teaches you something about yourself that you didn't realize it. Mm-hmm. So I don't shrink from criticism. I hope I learn from criticism and can incorporate lessons that make me a better leader in the process.
So, Madam President, is the ultimate, metric for success at Spelman College, is it the graduation rate? What are you looking at to measure then everything you just talked about and how you're bringing people together and the culture and everything and the initiatives? What are you using to measure, hey, we're on the right path here, it's working?
Well, first and foremost is student success. That's what we exist for. We exist to make sure that we are providing an environment that is academically challenging, and that it provides students an opportunity to get a high-quality education with the kind of mindset that I talked about before, that they are entrepreneurial, innovative, able to think critically and analyze. All of those things that, are important so that they can continue to be lifelong learners. That's the biggest success factor, is how our students do. But to do that, we also have to have a talented faculty. Mm-hmm. We have to have a talented faculty that stays and is committed to the student journey. We have to have good facilities so that the environment is good for learning. Mm-hmm. And we have to have an administration that does all those other things that are kind of the undergirding for the academic enterprise. So, all of those, each of them have success factors within them. But at the end of the day, it's how well do our students do, and, did we hold up our promise to give them an excellent opportunity that prepares them for lifelong learning?
And then how do you assess your leadership role in this first year when it's out of the way, so to speak?
Getting started on that journey. Mm-hmm. And, I expect that I've just started this job. We're just going into the second semester. I'm learning a lot. And so for me, this is really a year of learning. I want to listen. I want to learn. I want to see how my skills and the things that I'm passionate about really do help to propel Spelman forward. And, you know, I will feel like my first year is successful if I was able to really look back and realize how much I had learned, how much I had listened, how much as a result of listening, are we closer to thinking about, you know, where over the next few years are we going to drive this school and continue on this path of excellence? You know, we've been the number one HBCU mm-hmm. for 16 years in a row. That's fabulous. And that kind of assures us that we will always be, you know, number one, number two, we'll be up there. But can we look at other ways in which we want to benchmark ourselves mm-hmm. Against other women's liberal arts colleges, mm-hmm. against liberal arts colleges, national liberal arts colleges in general, in terms of our innovation, in terms of our ability to continue to be the top producer of women who go on to get PhDs in STEM. Mm-hmm. So I think all of those are measures. Service learning, we are now top in the area of service learning. So all of those are areas that I think we should start thinking about. What does it take to not only be the number one HBCU, which is fantastic, but how else are we thinking about our excellence and really looking at how we benchmark ourselves? So some of those are the kinds of things we want to keep pushing ourselves towards.
And then finally, as we wrap up, you know, we are just days away from observing another Martin Luther King Jr. national holiday. When you think about Dr. King's vision and all the social justice issues and the role of HBCUs in that, are you enlightened? Do you have some concerns? Both?
Well, you know, I think Martin Luther King Day is always a great opportunity for us to reflect on how far we've come, but also how far we still have to go. And we still do have a ways to go as a people. I think HBCUs contribute a lot to that. And as we talked about before, I think the fact that the popularity of HBCUs is rising says that we have a product that is still important. Perhaps as important as it was 140-some mm-hmm. years ago when Spelman was first established. So I want to make sure that we keep our eyes on the prize, if you will, and remember our commitment to making a difference and helping these young women make the choice to change the world.
I got to tell you, you're the only guest that I have interviewed on two different continents. We were over in Amman, Jordan.
Yes.
Back
yes,
in 2013. Yes, you talk yes. about life changing that, yeah. as a journalist as well, being well, able to, you know, cover what you all were doing with the Syrian refugees.
Yeah. Well, we were so pleased you were able to join us. That was great.
Now, that 16-hour flight was a little bit rough, Madam President, but it wasn't about that. I mean, it was more important what you all were doing, yeah. so thank you. Spelman College President, Dr. Helene Gale, good to see you again. Thank you for coming
thank
in
you.
And answering the questions.
Thank you.
And Closer Look continues from WABE in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott. There's a student named Jacob Davis. He was in his first year at UGA, and he watched the game last night.
I think Stetson played his best game ever. He didn't do that last game. He did this game, you know?
Yeah. Quarterback Stetson Bennett's his final game with Georgia. He threw four touchdowns, ran for two, came out of the game at the beginning of the fourth because really there was just nothing else to do to a standing ovation. As for next year, Jacob says, hey,
let's run it back. Three in a row. Let's do it.
And Jacob was talking to WABE's Molly Samuel last night in Athens. Now, he's not alone as far as the game. Look, I don't know what to say, but let me ask sports contributor Jordan Tucker, what do you have to say about them Dogs? Look, yesterday, when we said there'd be a lot of scoring, mm-hmm. we were right. We just didn't know it would all come from Georgia.
Right.
First of all, this was – what do you make of this?
I think yesterday we talked about dominance in Georgia.
Yeah, you did.
That's what we saw. That's all we saw for four quarters. 60 minutes, it was dominant. Like, it was scary to see them out there yesterday.
Look, when the game was 10-7, I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just opened the can. I shouldn't say that.
It got to 10-7, and I was like, we might have a game.
Yeah.
We might have a game. They get a stop here. They get a... I was trying to figure out a way to give TCU the benefit of the doubt. But.
What was it... When you watched that game last night, Jordan, was it that TCU just maybe just looked like they couldn't match up with Georgia and their play calling? I mean, Stetson looked like he was just in a video game, just playing in a schoolyard, just throwing, lofting, running.
What I saw last night was, I think what I said yesterday, the physicality of the SEC. Mm-hmm. I think they brought it for all 60 minutes, and you saw it, whether it was on offense, defense, whether it was the interior lines or the quarterbacks making decisions. Like, just the physicality of Georgia's football compared to TCU's was put on display last night.
Did TCU just look like they weren't prepared, or was just Georgia really is that good, folks? And that's no matter who the opponent would have been, it might have been. Now, we were arguing earlier what some of my colleagues were saying. Even one said, well, if it was Clemson, and then some said, well, if it was this team, if it was Alabama. You don't know that.
What we know
is that it was Georgia and TCU, and that's what we got last night.
Right. I think you couldn't have said it any better. Like, you can say as much as you want about putting Bama. You can put a Notre Dame, a Clemson, a USC in there. But we had TCU, and TCU earned their spot in the playoff.
They deserve to be there.
They earned their spot in the playoff. They just got put up against a juggernaut of a team. they made it known that we're not messing around with TCU yesterday.
You said that in order for Georgia to be considered, and this was an argument too in the mailroom earlier, is Georgia now the, forgive me folks, the new Alabama? Or do you still, I mean, look, they won back-to-back. I mean, what does it take? Three in a row?
I don't think there's a new Alabama, because I'm not betting against Nick Saban. I don't care what year it is, what game it is.
He's mad.
He's pissed. Did you see him on that the TV last night when they said...
When David Green said that Georgia was the... Yeah, he was not happy about that.
No. He woke up a sleeping giant.
So, Georgia... They are the team to beat already next year, folks were saying.
Yeah.
And they lost so many players last year. People said, oh, they're going to fall off.
No.
And they go undefeated.
You know what was the scariest thing of last night watching the game? The D-line. The D-line, I just heard true freshman. True freshman on the play. True freshman. Yeah. True freshman.
Which means, folks, they're going to be around for at least two more years.
Right. And they just kept reloading them. And, boy, those men are big. Those guys were big. They were huge. They were just making a difference in the game. I give it up to the D-line coach and the scheme that they had on defense, because, I mean, they looked like a deer in headlights.
You know, we all know Hollywood loves a good sports story there, Jordan. And so I don't know when the Stetson Bennett biopic is coming, but I do know from a walk-on player, a quarterback of all positions, it wasn't like he was a punter, no. Don't send me any emails because punters are important, but let's be really clear. We're talking about a quarterback.
Right.
A walk-on.
Mm-hmm.
Starting quarterback for the Georgia Bulldogs in two national championship games with a win.
Mm-hmm.
Does that ever happen again? Probably not.
Probably not for a long time. Probably not for a long time. Winning the national championship, coming from being a walk-on, I mean – that's unheard of. I think he gets a Netflix special at some point.
The Stetson Bennett story.
Yeah, they're going to give him four episodes or something.
So, in looking at now that we know that they're going to expand the playoffs, mm-hmm. and we've had this conversation, and you know, I'm not a big fan of it because I want the kids to go to class. but now folks are going to use this blowout, at least through their lens. They think this justifies, see, you got to have a playoff system. You know, you could have had six teams, whatever, you know, 12 teams is a lot, y'all,
right.
Really. But this is what people want. They want more teams in the playoff system. Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to bring a lot more excitement to the game. I feel like the game right now, especially in college, is kind of like teetering back and forth between entertaining and, like, what are we watching?
Well, and players being able to transfer.
Right.
I don't know how you feel about the transfer portal, folks, if you don't know what we're talking about. I mean, players can just... Some kids transfer to four different schools mm-hmm. within their career because they're trying to find the right program. I get it. But then also you've got endorsement deals. Mm-hmm. And it's all wrapped around money.
Right.
Let's be really clear.
And these kids haven't been paid, like, for a long time, as long as the game has existed, other than 2-3 years ago when they started NIL deals. And you could like formally get that check.
But does that also lead to, and we haven't seen this thus far, although some coaches say they don't like the NIL deals because kids can go where they know they'll get a better deal.
Mm-hmm.
Does that taint some of this at all, you think? College football? I mean, is it going to be problematic down the road?
I think it depends on how the player handles it. I think that's all what it comes down to, because you have players that are the most humble and really just want the opportunity to maybe be closer to home, and people are offering that money to come closer to home.
Yeah.
Or you've got the arrogant player who wants to flash every check he's got, flash all everything he's getting from these colleges, and that's what can destroy the game. But if you're going about it for the right reasons, I think it's a positive for the game, mm-hmm. but there's always a consequence, good or bad.
When you look at Georgia, and there's a lot of money. I mean, they're boosters. I know they're all happy. When you look at programs like Georgia that have stadiums and facilities that are just incredible. They've got lockers with USB and Bluetooth, you know, capabilities, and the weight rooms are just amazing. Mm-hmm. And then you look at some programs that don't have that. It really is haves and have-nots.
It is. And for the have-nots, you can tell there's a difference in their program. You can tell how the kids are walking around the building. Like, they might not want to be there. I know when I was at North Carolina, we didn't have updated locker rooms and players' lounges. And as soon as Mack Brown got there, he tore everything down and said, "We're rebuilding this."
So you had a lounge?
Oh, yeah.
What was in your lounge?
Whew, everything. We had stuff in
what do you need a lounge for? Go to your room and study.
No, but like, you got to think, you've got like three classes throughout the day. About an hour
just
and a
three?
Half.
You only had three? I ran track and I had like five.
Oof, I was taking 15 hours, 12 sometimes. So yeah. I wasn't in much class, but I was going when I could.
But you went to class.
I did go to class.
Because you know your mother's listening.
I do know she's listening. Yes, Mom, I did go to class. But no, like in our players' lounge, when I was there prior to Mack Brown, we'd have the couches, we'd have a couple TVs and a Papa Shot. And some ping pong tables. But when Matt came, man, he put PlayStations in there, Xboxes.
Recruits like that stuff?
Recruits love it. Recruits love it. Especially, you got to think, if you're going to a game and you're tired and you see your dad passed out on one of the couches, you're like, oh, he feels at home too. He feels at home too. We've got massage chairs. We've got some sleeping pods.
Have you ever seen Notre Dame's facilities?
No, but my very first...
Or LSU's?
No, my very first visit was to Oregon when I was a kid.
Oh, because they got Nike up there. So.
Blew every other school out of the water.
Really?
Didn't matter what any other school had. Oregon had it.
And you won a national championship, so what's the problem? Oregon? All right. You've gotten through your first sort of your rookie year of being a closer look sports contributor. How you feeling?
I'm loving it. I love talking game. I love being here. It's exciting to talk about. I get passionate about it, so I'm excited to continue it.
All right, Jordan Tucker, WABE, well, Closer Look sports contributor. We appreciate you taking the time. Your predictions have been pretty good.
Ooh, 7 points last night. 7 points. They couldn't get 20?
Oh, well, they tried.
They tried. They
and,
tried.
And congratulations to TCU
for
just getting
it,
there
yeah.
because they deserve it.
Right.
But they will forever be part of history. And not
Ooh, not in a good way.
Time. That is it for this edition of Closer Look. Tiffany Griffith is our supervising producer alongside LaShawn Hudson, Daniel Rizal, and Pat St. Clair. Our engineer is Kevin Rinker. A reminder to let us know your thoughts on today's program or any other. Send me an email, rose@wabe.org. And if you missed any of today's program, it's online, wabe.org/closerlook. And of course, Closer Look weeknights at 7. And we have a podcast. We're all over the place. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Local, state, national politics. WABE and NPR have the coverage you need. I'm Jim Burris, host of WABE's All Things Considered. Whether it's on the air at 90.1, streaming online, or connecting through our mobile app, WABE keeps you on top of election 2024 in what's sure to be a pivotal year in politics. And for candidates and ballot information, visit our election hub at wabe.org/election2024.